This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today on Season 3, Episode 69, I kick off the Road to Osaka series with previous guests Clive Gross from the Bush Turkey Track Club in Brisbane and Kyle Weiss, coach of Kyle's Run Coaching on the Gold Coast. Both previous guests of the show, and coincidentally, 2:31 marathoners, are very much treating this marathon as a sub-2:30 project. Kyle and Clive will dive very closely into their training and preparation for the event, nutrition, mental applications, footwear, and many more. What I think will also resonate with the listeners is that both of these guys work full-time and have families, so you'll hear about how they juggle their training around these certain commitments. I hope you enjoyed this spin-off series away from the usual one-on-one interviews as part of Local Legends in Running podcast. Welcome everyone to the Local Legends in Running podcast, Road to Osaka 25 series. It's February 24. Isn't it, boys, the big event?
Yep, that's it.
It is.
Excellent. And who I mean by boys is actually men. That's Clive Gross from the Bush Turkey Track Club in Brisbane, the 2:31 man, Gold Coast 2023. And ironically, also Kyle Weiss from, the coach of Kyle's Run Coaching, also a 2:31 GC 23 marathoner. Firstly, welcome to Clive.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Ollie. Excited to be here.
Excellent. Kyle, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. And I've got to correct you. I'm 2:32 from 2023. Clive tailed me up that day. I actually went back and checked the splits the other day after we chatted about it. And I was in the group, but I fell off the back a lot earlier. And He got me that day. So no, 2:31 from 2024. That was this year.
Jeez, my first mistake.
We both had a blow up that day then.
Yeah, well, actually, I went back and looked at the splits and I was like, I wonder where it was. And I think I fell off that pack at like, maybe 25K and you guys got maybe like nearly two minutes up the road. And I think it ended up being about a minute in the end. So I think the gap was closing slightly towards the end, but I don't think I was in much better shape than you at that point.
Right. Well, I was with that pack till 32K and then one of the boys from the pack broke away. And I went with him. And I remember early on in the run, Scotty Westcott, who was pacing, I was running up alongside him and I was getting pretty excited. I was high-fiving all my teammates as they came past and stuff. And he kind of told me to settle down a bit. I said, just, mate, hold back, just dial it back a bit until you get to 32K and then you can do whatever you want. So I tucked in, settled in. And then when this guy broke away at 32K, I thought, okay, that's a sign. I've got to go with him. And then I regretted it about a K and a half later. And, I started getting cramps in my legs and ended up walking for a bit to try and walk them off. And a few minutes later, the pack came flying past. So regretted that.
We've all got stories like that.
Love a bit of context because talking of context, this is going to be all about Road to Osaka. We're going to aim probably for every couple of weeks, gents, if that's okay with you guys, to kind of give the listeners a bit of insight into your training and other topics like nutrition or mental applications out there. Those things that often runners, particularly new runners, might not be so aware of as well, which I definitely have a lot of listeners in that realm. Before we move on, though, I saw a very rare afternoon run by Clive today. It's a Sunday, by the way, 15th of December, 8 p.m. we talk now. But it was only about 4 hours ago that Clive started a 33K long run at 4:15 average pace. How's that, mate?
It was tough but fun, you know. Like the afternoon long run isn't something that happens very often, but we had a bit of a scheduling issue in the household, and my wife had booked out the morning for a ride, so I had no choice but to put her back to the afternoon. And I was just thankful that we had a fair bit of cloud cover and there was a decent breeze along the waterfront, so it wasn't anywhere near as hot and muggy as it could have been. But yeah, it was good to get out there and get it done. Sometimes it's nice just to get rolling out on your own, just sort of grind it out. So I actually quite enjoyed it.
Completely agree, Kyle. We out there today. It's been awfully humid and warm, hey.
It has, yeah. I was opposite end of the day. So we started about 5 o'clock this morning and had a bit of a group, which was nice this morning, and got through 30K, which we can go into it a bit later. But yeah, that's my longest long run for over a month now. So it felt a lot longer than it has when I was last doing them, but it was nice to tick off a what felt like a decent long run, and yeah, jump in the water afterwards, cool off, which perks of doing it in the beach. It was nice.
Jump in the water. How would the Sandgate water go, Clive? You jump in that, the Sandgate waterfront?
It can be done. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just not as nice as the Gold Coast water, I'm sure.
And I think, Clive, that was your longest long run of late, wasn't it? 33 kilometres?
I think I've done a couple thereabouts. It could be my longest, but I've done another couple that would be pretty close if I haven't. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, gents, I just want to start quickly from Parkrun yesterday, and this is probably more so for the listeners who are local, but Kedron Parkrun, Bert, the Bert squad in Brisbane, and the Bush Turkey Track Club, who Clive and I are members of. We attended that event. The Bert squad, sorry, has been there for a couple of years now, probably longer, every sort of December. They pick one run. It's their day of the Christmas party as well. So I saw a few videos of them out late. I won't talk any further about the frivolities that I saw online, but they're out there partying, which is great to see them celebrating a massive year for them, but also a massive year for the Bush Turkeys, Clive. Hey, I think it culminated yesterday in an awesome event to see so many of us do so well.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I was actually looking at some stats, just getting ready for the annual general meeting next weekend. And we've got something like 37% of our current membership are new members from 2024. So it just shows the amount of growth we've had this year. And the event came about because Jim was very keen to try and break 17 minutes off the success of his recent 17:15. And when he asked if I'd be prepared to pace him to it, I couldn't say no. It just was too fun an opportunity to miss out on. Then we found out that the Burt guys were planning on having a hit out at Kedron. So I messaged Peter Bracken and said, "Oh, hey, do you mind if we jump in? Because we've got a bit of a sub 17 hit out going on." And so we lined it up, and it was awesome having both clubs there and just everyone having a smash. And obviously not everyone hit their targets. It's pretty hot and a pretty tough time of year to be getting PBs, but it was just good to see everyone working and just heaps of fun.
Yeah, got to halfway and it felt about 5K at 2.5K. So that was a sign of the humidity. Excuses. I was a little bit off from what I wanted. It didn't hit that sub 17 and Clive got further and further away from me. But I reckon there would have been overall in the whole park run, maybe 20 to 30 Burt runners and almost 20 from Bush Turkeys too. So looking at it, about almost 50 runners who were probably, if we extended out to even sub 18:30, I think most of them were pretty close to that. Do you think, Clive?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it wouldn't be many going much slower than 18, 90 minutes.
Yeah, agreed. Let's move on so Kyle can chip in here. More so about Zatopek. It was a pretty eventful affair last night. The men's and women's 10K is and has been the main event at Zatopek for many years. 10,000, they call it, rather more so on the track in meters, for whatever reason that is. But yeah, the women first as usual, then the men. Rhys Davies and Jack Rayner, clear standouts by the end, but it wasn't like that during the race, was it? Lauren and Leanne Pompeani were there pretty much to the end, and Lauren Ryan really pushed the pace. She's been in America for a couple of years now, and she wanted to sort of show the ladies, the local ladies, what it's all about here. And it must have been about, I think it didn't give her enough time in terms of her kick when she started. It would have been a lap and a half to 2 laps maximum where she really started to pick up the pace and got to the final lap, and Rose took her over there for, what was her time there? 32:21 for Rose, 32:23 for Lauren, and 32:32 for Leanne. Then the men's, that was interesting because Brett Robinson also probably a little bit of maybe some anger or something around the lines of revenge, maybe. He's a nice bloke, but he missed out on Paris. That was handed over to Andy Buchanan there, and he broke his record as well, coincidentally, just recently as well. So I'm sure that Brett was out to prove a point, and he went to the front there for a little bit, didn't he? And it didn't last too long, maybe a couple laps until, oh, it must have been the last lap or so where Jack took over again. Because I think Jack, it seemed to be on his terms, didn't it? He was pushing the pace to a degree. It was quite pedestrian to start with, but pushing it from maybe about 6 or 7 laps out a little bit further to kind of get some runners out the back off him. And it left about five of them there towards the end. 28:26 there for Rayner. Sam Clifford, awesome run there, 28:29. And New Zealander Ollie Chignell, 28:35. Yeah, Clive, did you get a chance to watch that footage? I know you missed out on it live.
Jan, so I've got to confess, I didn't do my homework. I haven't watched Anapec yet. I'm actually going to watch it as soon as we get off the call because I was at the cricket yesterday. Cricket got canned, but we continued drinking. And then I've just haven't had a spare hour to sit down and watch it all day. So, yeah, definitely on the cards. But I figured we'd be talking about it and the results would be spoiled, but that's okay.
Yeah, I'll have to come back to Clive if he's willing to contribute there. I guess the results stand for something in terms of history, but Cole, did you watch it live last night?
Yeah, I was kind of keeping track of it. And it's always interesting watching these races because you never know whether they're going to be kind of going out hard and some guys are going for a time, or whether they're purely going to be like tactical. And it kind of happened in both races, but watch the ladies first. And their first couple of laps, I was kind of watching it going, they are just jogging around here. And I think they went through 3K and I want to say it was around 10 minutes or just over 10 minutes, which the majority of
Wow.
that field is not very fast. So we're talking
320s.
320 pace for these ladies is just jogging around. So it was an interesting one. And then Lauren Ryan was just putting in these like spurts of like really fast laps within there. She'd just take off and run really quick lap, but it'd spread everyone out, and then she'd stop and jog again, let everyone catch up. And it was just like watching a slinky going back and forth. It was quite funny to watch. And it was kind of then similar in the men's, but it was just the first, I think the first K for the men was 3:11, 3:10, 3:11. I remember watching it going, like, that is really slow for these guys. Like, these guys can run a lot faster than that. And they would just look like they were just bunched up and you're just waiting for someone to fall. But then, like, a few of them just said, right, we're going to pick it up. And that was just a slow wind up and good to watch. But yeah, it's always motivating watching these races. I haven't done a whole lot of stuff on the track, but I feel like every time I watch it, I'm like, right, need to get on the track a bit more. And it just seems like Melbourne's got such a good scene for track stuff. Like, they just have so many track meets on kind of the whole summer. So like for people down there, they can just jump in these races kind of most weekends or every few weeks if they want to, and they do it really well there. But yeah, I enjoyed watching it. Coverage was good, track looked good, the bridge over the track, they put the lights on, like it looks like
Yes.
quite a big spectacle down there. But yeah, it's always a good night of viewing.
Yeah, it's always interesting seeing the Brisbane runners who head down there, which is quite rare. Kieran Perkins, probably the king of Brisbane running in the last sort of 5 to 7 years. He was there, and I believe he's run very close to sub 29 before. You can't really always talk about times representing the ability of runners because that was a 28:30-ish for Jack Rayner. His PB and Australian record is 27:09. So it's a far cry from that. But someone like Kieran, who's just around the local areas of Brisbane, smashing up events, was just nowhere to be seen. And if he listens to this, that's of no offense to him. He's an amazing runner, but it just shows you it's a reality check of how harsh it is out there, particularly on a track. I've been there for a 10K myself and being destroyed and being overlapped. It's not a good feeling, but certainly motivating to see, particularly those guys out the front. Brett, he's coming back, maybe. Clive, what do you think? Is he still on the marathon bandwagon? Does he want Andy's crown back?
I've got no doubt he wants it back, and I'm sure he's capable of running a 206. He just needs to, I guess, string together the right marathon.
Yeah, and will that be Valencia? What do you think, boys?
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard
Great.
him in a podcast in the past talk about how he doesn't really rate Valencia, and I think his reasoning was it's Valencia's really good at stacking the field for a certain kind of caliber of athlete, but there's sort of a gap around that 206, 207 that isn't particularly deep. And so he talked about some of those Japanese marathons being preferable for him. Now maybe his views will change after Andy's performance. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, there's plenty of other flat runs out there, Berlin, and obviously the one that you guys are doing, Osaka as well, are probably the big three these days of fast runs, but we'll see how that progresses. Let's get to you guys, though. Running news always, I guess, is of interest to the listeners, but of main concern, surely, are you guys to the crowd? And I think we just start very quickly, gents, if that's okay, just to run through again within a minute or so about. Just let's start with your goals first, right? For Osaka, what if there's a time goal, an A, B, or C, whatever you guys do for that, your PBs and achievements, just rattle off five to marathon, and then anything else that might be of interest, do you think, to the listeners as a person, work, family, that kind of stuff. If we were to start with Clive, Osaka
Sure.
goals,
Yeah.
what do you
So,
got?
well, I guess I haven't finalized my ultimate goal yet, but it's certainly going to be somewhere sub 230. We'll see how this summer build goes. I'd like to think perhaps a sub 228 is reasonable, but certainly sub 230 is a must run.
Yeah, agreed. I definitely think the ability is there. PBs, mate, 5K to marathon. What do you got?
So 5K is 15:27 or thereabouts. 10K is 32:41. Half marathon is 69:45, and marathon is 2:31:50.
Awesome. Can I firsthand say from experience of running with Clive that definitely those 5 and 10K times are going to come down within the next year, surely, if you put one together. But I know the marathon's
Yeah,
the focus.
they're definitely my weakest runs. Obviously, the half's the best one by far, but yeah, definitely got to get those five and tens down.
And just tell us about work life, family life, mate, around running.
Yeah, so I guess I get all my running done, or most of my running done, early in the morning. So I'm up out the door by 4:30 most of the time, and back home between 6 and 6:30, apart from obviously Sunday long runs. And so I've just got my routine down pat, where I'm out the door early, I go to bed early, I still get quality family time for a little bit before work on weekdays, and get the afternoon evening time with the family after work. I find that works really well. My wife's also a triathlete slash road runner, so we share athlete rosters and sort of juggle things a bit there, which seems to work well. Like, for example, I typically have Thursdays off running and do a heavy gym session. So while I'm in the gym, in the home gym, Ricky's out with Moreton Bay Road Runners doing her run session, and we sort of alternate throughout the week like that. So I've got two beautiful kids as well, and I work in electrical engineering, so currently working on the Queens Wharf Brisbane Casino Resort project.
Right, not giving us the long version of your work like you did last time.
No, I think we'll be here for a while.
No, I love it, mate. Thank you very much for that, and I hope that gives context to the listeners too about you and what you want to achieve and what and largely too. I think what resonates with them is those barriers, so to call it, the things that we do love like children, but they are ultimately barriers in some way to achieving our goals, and in some way too, they're also I think motivators. But Kyle, how about you, mate? Osaka goals, PBs, and anything personally related that might resonate with listeners too?
Yeah, so I think Osaka, I've been talking about this 230 for a while and haven't quite hit it. So that's definitely going to be the target for me. Again, like Clive said, given that the build goes well and everything, if I could see a time with a 229 in front of it, I'm happy with that. Anything under that is an absolute bonus. But I feel like that's just the mark that you kind of want to get the monkey off the back and just tick it off, and then you can kind of move on into the 220s. But ultimately, I'd still love a PB. Like I've only actually raced four marathons. Like I said on the podcast with you the other day, Ollie, like I've run the distance probably 100 times, but I only raced it four times, but I've PB'd every time I've raced. So I'm like, I kind of want to just keep that streak going and see how long I can keep just like chipping away at these PBs. I ran Gold Coast last year and then I ran a 1 second PB in Berlin. So I thought I'd missed it. And then I found out I got it by 1 second. All right, the streak's on. So I got it in Gold Coast this year. So I was like, this will be five from five PBs if I can get it. So obviously 2:30 is the goal, but if I still end up PBing, I can still walk away and go, right, I've kept that streak alive, which would be good. So ultimately 2:29 is the goal. But yeah, PBs for me, I think we're fairly similar over 5 and 10 club. I'm 15:25 for 5, 32:56 for 10. I'm 1:11:53 for a half, and then 2:31:46 for the marathon. So I definitely think for me, my 10's probably the one that I feel like probably should drop a little bit. The half, I think I probably could drop a little bit as well. But again, I'm never really focused on the shorter stuff specifically, but I'm still pretty happy I've run those times. But yeah, I think the marathon's the focus at the moment, and would love to see a two in front of that instead of a three in the marathon. And kind of family work life for me. So I work as a physio, that's my full-time job, as well as the coaching stuff. But I predominantly work with runners there. So most of my day is spent talking about running generally, whether that's with the coaching, the physio work, or just training myself. And yeah, same as Clive. We're up early in the morning, kind of training, getting it done before kind of everyone goes off to work and family and kids. And I've just got the one daughter at the moment. So we kind of just like balance all of that between, as you guys know, work and training, and you're just kind of juggling everything at once. And it seems to all work out in the end, but at times you don't know how it all fits, but you make it work. But yeah, that's pretty much me. I'm looking forward to this build.
Yeah, 100%. And just as you guys are talking to, I just thought it'd be of interest too for the listeners of how long you've been running for, because it can be quite different, can't it? Kyle, you're probably privy to athletes down there who've been around for only a year or so who are running marathons. And then, people have been running for years who haven't run marathons, like myself, even. And those who have run marathons for years and have been out there for a long time. So just give us a rough idea without going through that full story again, just roughly of when it started to get a little bit more serious for you. From memory, it was about 2019 for you, Clive, but not too sure about Kyle.
So
So you want me
mine,
to go
I'm
or
trying.
Carl?
You go, Clive. You go if yours first.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so you're right, Ollie. 2019 is when I started getting into running, and I guess started consistently running and made it a regular part of my lifestyle. Prior to that, I was pretty sedentary and stationary. So yeah, I guess my running age is about 5.
I'm trying to think when I would have taken mine, where I'd say I'd taken it seriously. Like I felt like initially when I first started in like 2013, 14, that was me taking it seriously. But looking back, I probably wasn't actually training very seriously. I thought I was taking it seriously. I reckon I started running kind of 2012, 2013, and then started racing the really long stuff in the ultras in 2014. And then I kind of just stuck in like the trail ultra running scene until probably kind of the start of 2020. I raced a 100K trail race in New Zealand in the start of 2020. I was supposed to go to South Africa for a big race, and then COVID hit and all those plans got cancelled. And I was like, right, I might just start doing some short, fast stuff because I had to train by myself, couldn't train with the group anymore. And then pretty much the last like 4 years has been very like road, more marathon focused. So I've almost had this like two halves of like the trail ultra marathon years and then like the road and marathoning years, which has probably been since 2020. So kind of two different halves for me.
Yeah, I also like that question too, because it just gives some idea too of the trajectory for someone. I'm hoping you agree here, Kyle, like Clive, who's only been out there for 5 years. And I say only because there's been many out there longer, many shorter, but the trajectory is still very much upwards. And I'd say that for you too, Kyle, but potentially a bit sharper for Clive. He's probably just starting to come around, but there's a point in athletes' careers, particularly in their late 30s, 40s, where they start to plateau. But I think if you start late, that running age can re you can really improve quickly, obviously to a certain point, compared to someone who's been out there for a very long time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. I see it all the time. Like again, and I get like the not the privilege. It's not nice to see your injured runners, but you're kind of working with runners all day, every day. So I'm seeing that like I kind of get to see all the mistakes people make when they get into it in those early days as well. But there's such a wide variety of people that I see the ones that kind of are all in when they're in like school age and their teenage years. And they're the ones that kind of get to like 18, 19 and just like fall away from the sport and just leave it completely. They just kind of are over it. That was like the school thing. They train hard. And then they tend to come back into it in like their like mid to late 30s, early 40s. They tend to come back around to it, but they miss this whole chunk of like 10, 15 years where they don't run at all. And then you've got this massive group of like, I would say early to mid 20s that are just like loving the sport at the moment. Like that's been the last few years of like, and there's probably people listening to this that have got into this kind of since probably COVID started and, you know, the running boom, I suppose, has kind of really taken off. And this is massive group of people in that demographic that have just, I suppose, taken over the sport nearly. You see them everywhere, which I feel like for me, 7, 8, 9 years ago, like if I went for a long run along the coastline, I was not seeing that demographic of people out running. Like I was more passing them, like leaving Surface and Broadbeach at 5 a.m., not out doing their long runs. So it's been this kind of funny shift. But again, I've also spoken with like heaps of people that kind of just fall in love with the sport in like their 30s and 40s and are just like, oh, I wish I'd started sooner. But then at the same time, if they'd started sooner, like would they still be doing it now? Like I don't know. I think everyone kind of has this window of time that they enjoy the sport for, and whether that's just kind of when life it fits with life a little bit better. And yeah, there's such a spectrum of it, which is really cool.
Yeah, where do you think in terms of your direction too, Clive? You're are you 38 this year, Clive? 37.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, because if I'm being honest, I really feel like I'm plateauing as an athlete, as a 36-year-old out there. But I've been running for 10 to 15 years, very progressively. But that's where potentially if you've started at a later age, and I know Clive, you did dabble a bit back in school, but because of that potential later start, I think that improvement's going to be definitely apparent for a few years. What do you think?
I really hope you're right about that. That'd be nice if I can keep getting faster in my 40s.
Yeah, well, before we move on, let's get to this training. Hey, I think the bulk of what we're going to talk about here on the Road to a Soccer series is going to be your training weeks. I always like to give the Inside Running a shout out because I think running weeks were made famous by the Inside Running podcast many years ago. They're very widely used now to get insight into runners' training. And I guess like when I asked this question of you, Kyle, I think you answered it well, like you normally do with these questions. But we really spoke about this common Australian structured format of a Tuesday quick session, a Friday tempo or threshold, and Sunday long. So I'm really looking forward to diving into as much detail as you can give, particularly around like the weather at the moment, how you even sort of apply different nutrition techniques before and after, what you're eating, recovery, particularly paces that you're running, how the group affect like the bush turkey and your group down there, the groups actually have that impact on you as well. So yeah, let's get to Clive and let's just run through this week as a starting point to what will proceed in later weeks, but starting at Monday for you.
Yeah, sure. So just pull up my journal here. So Monday, 50 minutes recovery run, easy. Tuesday, we did the bush turkey interval session. So we did some VO2 max stuff, 3 by K, followed by 5 400s. We had a pretty big group on Tuesday. I was doing the reps generally with Stephen and Ewan. According to Garmin, I ran the 3 by K at 3:05, 3:03, and 3:04. Now the other guys who are a second or two behind me reckon that was probably a bit generous. So anyway, that's what Garmin says, so I'm going with it. And the 400s were about I would say 2:50 pace or thereabouts. Yeah, so it was a good session. Wednesday, medium long run. So we typically do a medium long run out in the hills of Bracken Ridge on a Wednesday. This one was 1 hour 40. Again, met up with Ewan, Stephen, Taz, I think was off this week, Rob, Jassy. Think that's everyone this week. But yeah, that's a regular thing we do with the group at the moment as well, which seems to be working well. Thursday, so typically I have Thursday off running. I got on the indoor trainer for 45 minutes just to flush the legs out. Then I did a heavy leg session. Copenhagen's counter movement jumps with the weighted plates, some remaining deadlifts, hip thrusts, and a couple of other bits. Friday, what did I do? 50 minutes, just a recovery run.
Yep.
Saturday, so this. Sorry.
Taper for parkrun.
Yes. Yep. Just. Oh, actually, sorry. Friday I did some strides as well, just to get ready for Saturday. I also spent a couple of minutes at that 3:23 pace, just to make sure I was sort of comfortable with that rhythm, given I'd be pacing the guys Saturday. So pacing duties, running sub 17. Prior to organizing this, I'd sort of penciled in the plan running like a 30 to 35 minute threshold run. So I kind of still wanted to do a bit of a workout, and I felt that 3:23 pace would sort of be at my threshold or thereabouts. I think in winter it'd be probably slightly slower than my threshold. In summer, it's probably slightly quicker than my threshold. So I thought I'd try and like top up the training dose and do a couple of K at marathon effort prior to doing the parkrun. So I did 4K at marathon effort, just along the Kedron Rook parkrun course. Then came back, met up with everyone for the parkrun start, ran the so I ran 16:48 for the parkrun. So that was about 3:22 pace. Then a big cool down. So yeah, that was a good session, a lot of fun, like we spoke about already. And then didn't do a gym session. I often try and do a gym session on a Saturday as well. I've just had a jam-packed weekend with cricket and Christmas parties and that sort of stuff. So only the one gym session for the week. And then, as we spoke about, did the 2 hour 20 long run this afternoon. So that finishes off the week with about 109K.
Geez, that's solid. Mate, I hadn't realized you'd tacked on a few Ks before the park run too, at about 3:30 pace. About 5K there as well. Is that right? 4K.
Yeah, 4K marathon effort.
Yeah, it's just like we've got to remind ourselves how humid and hot it is out there at the moment. Like that's truly remarkable to, I know 16:48 is a far cry from your PB, but it's still a firm pace. And for you, you said threshold is that in your mind, is that your half marrow pace or what some claim as an hour pace?
Well, I guess the easy rule of thumb is, whatever you can run for an hour, but no more. Generally for me, it's a little bit slower than half marathon pace, even though half marathon you're running for longer than an hour. But then, during a half marathon race, you've got the race day adrenaline, you've got your super shoes on, you're tapered and fresh. So for example, when I ran 69 minutes for Melbourne half last year, all my thresholds were around, towards the end of the build, around 3:21 pace. But then I went out and ran the half at 3:17 pace. So I always find, yeah, thresholds are typically for me a few seconds slower than half marathon goal, half marathon pace.
Yeah, and one last question I had, Colin, if you got any yourself, have a think. But your weight sessions there too, Clive, on a Thursday and a Saturday. Any reason why you picked those days? They're the day before two quite loaded days in the threshold in the long run Sunday.
Yeah, so Thursday just seems it works out best because that's the day Ricky's out running. So that's best use of my time is just to hit the home gym. But also, I don't mind doing a threshold run on fatigue legs. Like, I would avoid it on a Tuesday, on a Monday prior to a Tuesday session because I want that to be quality and I want to, get the hit the, that biomechanical speed goal. Whereas the threshold run, I think you just want to get conditioned to running, being uncomfortable for long durations. And I don't think you're really necessarily losing by maybe having to dial back the pace a couple of seconds because you've got heavy fatigue legs. I think it's going to help with the overall conditioning.
Yeah, I see that. And I think a lot of runners do stress about being tired and sore on a run after a weight session. Like it doesn't really matter if it's just training and can
Yeah.
train those legs to work well under fatigue.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, as I said, I think there's definitely merit to having fresh legs for certain key workouts, but yeah, things like thresholds, I think it's not critical to be nailing the numbers. It's all about, that conditioning.
Yep. Anything else, Kyle?
I was just going to ask Clive, how did like the 3:32, 3:33 pace feel?
The last K or so definitely felt I was like I was maybe perhaps a bit above true marathon effort. But it still felt easy enough. Like, yeah. felt like it
Because I don't
easily.
know about you, but like every time I run that pace in training, I just think there is no way I'm going to hold this pace for 42 Ks.
Yeah.
Not a chance. And then you get out there and race day and you do it. It's the same with all the paces, but every time I do it, I'm like, how? I remember like 2 or 3 weeks after Gold Coast, I did a session where I was like, got about 800 meters into a rep at the pace I held for the marathon. And I went, I just don't get how we run that. I can't comprehend it because it feels so hard in training. I don't know if
Yeah,
that's just me, but that pace just
it's
never feels
crazy, isn't it?
comfortable.
I'm the same. I did a bit of a test marathon session about a month ago where I wanted to run 13K continuous at marathon effort. And it just so happened it already started to get hot at that point. But that morning was pretty mild conditions when I started the effort. And so I went into it like running pretty close to what would be my marathon pace. And at the time that kind of felt about right. So I was running maybe 3:30, 3:35s. But then, suddenly about 4 or 5K and the sun comes up, it suddenly gets humid and thick and hot. And at that point, I'm finding it really hard to keep that pace up. And then my heart rate's then sort of way above my threshold and I'm no longer at marathon effort. So I ended up knocking back a couple of K off the session. But listening to your episode on the show last week, I really enjoyed hearing you talk about training off your marathon heart rate. And I really think there is something to that because you can say all you like, you're going to go off effort, but when you look at your watch and you see that the pace is dropping, it kind of gets in your head a bit. Whereas if you can work off the heart rate, then the goal is the heart rate, right? And your heart rate's your heart rate.
Yeah,
So
100%.
I think that's a really good idea, actually.
I'm almost tempted to do a session in the next couple of weeks and just have like lap time and heart rate on my watch and have no pace feedback whatsoever and just run to this like what I know I can hold for a marathon
Have a
with no
guess.
other feedback and just see what it comes back at out of interest. Because
Yeah.
like again, it depends on the conditions on the day, but I'd be interested at the moment, and I'll chat about it in my week because I'm a Mara. It's not going to be very fast for me at the moment, but I almost reckon that'd be an interesting way to kind of go. Because, and this is what I chat about in the episode. It's like the conditions are going to affect it. Like I'm like, if I can hit these sessions in 3:32, 3:33, I'm like, we should be flying in a Osaka if it's 20 degrees colder. Like it's almost like if
Yeah.
you, as close as we can get to that pace, that should be a massive confidence boost. So if we can make that feel relatively comfortable, then that's definitely a good sign.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's the thing
definitely.
too. In the summer heat, that contrast of, oh, this is definitely not my marathon pace, but it's so much hotter. Most of Brisbane and Gold Coast runners aren't doing their big mileage for a run now. It's off season, so to speak, isn't it, for a lot of athletes? But only unless usually if they're doing these overseas ones or they're starting a marathon block early. But usually they're not as stressed about it. Like in winter, if you've been out there for a while and you know yourself and your pace, like you can hit it pretty well and often be like, oh yeah, that was pretty good. Surely, yeah, you have some days where it doesn't, but it's so much more predictable in winter. I just can't talk highly enough about Brisbane running in winter. It's so much easier, isn't it?
Yeah,
That's
it's generally I guess the ideal situation is you just treat summer as a time to stay fit and healthy, not get injured, and just keep ticking things along, but don't overdo it. But I guess we don't have that luxury when when we've got a marathon in 10 weeks.
100%. Clive, how does the next week look for you? You've got a few big marathon sessions, Sundays I'm talking about, lined up in the next month or so, don't you? What's on the horizon next week?
Yeah, so next week I'll be doing a marathon workout on Sunday. I haven't quite worked out how I'm going to chop up the reps. If it wasn't summer, I'd be keen to sort of have a go at trying to do the entire workout at marathon intensity without breaking it up. But I just don't think that's realistic in the heat. Your heart rate's probably just going to run away. So it'd be good to sort of chop it up a bit to help get the heart rate back down before going again. So I'm thinking maybe 4x4K or something like that. And actually, I wanted to ask you, Kyle, when you're going off marathon heart rate, I imagine you'd want to start what the heart rate in the first couple of reps or the first 5K, for instance, isn't going to be the same heart rate in the last 5K, right? Like you've got to accept that the heart rate's going to creep up over time, especially as you might be 3, 4 degrees hotter at the end of a 15, 20K marathon workout than when you started. So I guess you maybe want to start a few points below your goal marathon heart rate and then let it creep up over the duration of the workout. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of went back and looked at it, and I'm like, I usually always use like the say 4x5K rep like session as an example. That's kind of like a textbook one where I'm like, in my head, I'll tell people to run that where like I want the first 5K to feel like say kilometer 5 to 10. I want the second rep to feel like you're running up say closer to halfway. Third rep should feel like maybe 25 to 30, and then it's okay for that last rep to feel like you're 35Ks into a marathon. So then I'll go back and kind of look at what my heart rate was for like that 5K block in the marathon, like what it was at 5K, which is probably ends up being 2, 3, 4 beats lower than what I averaged for the actual marathon. And I'll run the first rep at that one, middle rep closer to probably a beat or two below. The third rep's probably a beat or two higher, and the last rep's probably closer to threshold, just given that that's probably what I'll end up trying to hit. I think Gold Coast, like my threshold's about 183, and I think I average 170, let's say 177, 178 at Gold Coast. So I'd probably like I'll run those reps where I'll start off maybe the first rep at 174, 175, which is probably what I'd start the marathon at. And then I'd run the last rep at, 181, 182, which is kind of what I'm aiming to do in the marathon as well. So I'll just kind of replicate the heart rate of the marathon.
So you're happy to let it creep right up to like threshold heart rate by the last rep or the last couple of, say, 5K or so. All right, that makes sense.
Just that last bit. And I'm like, at the end of the day, it probably will in the marathon. Like, I'm like, if I've the best ones I've run, I've kind of been able to get up closer to threshold that last 5K. If I've still got some legs to run, like the last few Ks, I'm definitely up close to it. So I won't want to hit it. But that I think the last rep, I'm fine for that to kind of to creep a little bit more, but I'll let it build slightly across the session.
I suppose last 5, 7K in the marathon, you just whatever you got left, right? There's no rules,
Well, it depends. I'm like, I
just
feel like I
hold it
haven't really
together.
had one where I've been out of like heart rate's not been my limiting factor. It's been my legs, not my heart rate. So it's a tricky one to balance. But I'll probably just use threshold. Like I'll still try and keep it that bit below threshold, whatever that ends up being. Again, depends on the weather.
Yeah, cool. I like it. I might be plagiarizing that from next week.
Go for it.
And that's the thing with the excuse me, with the marathon too. It's a bit more predictable. It's a longer duration, so the heart rate range isn't as large as say a 3K is probably arguably where you're going to find the biggest range there of heart rates. Really going to get up very quickly, so that predictability can help. But yeah, it's so hard in summer, isn't it? Ideally, Clive and I were talking off air just earlier about you want to string as many Ks together to load the body up as best you can in so many ways to prepare for it. But at the moment, you're probably got to break it up. But my more important question was, like, how have you guys come to the realization for you, Kyle? You're dropping 183, that number. How do you know that is your heart rate or anywhere near thresholds? Like, have you done any testing in this realm, or how have you got to that number?
A what like a long time ago, yes, I had done testing. And it was a little bit higher, but again, as we age, that was years ago, it's going to come down a little bit. I know the last half that I did, I ran at one, I reckon I ran 184 average for the half, maybe 183, 184 for the half. And then all my marathons, I've pretty much fallen at around, let's say, between 176 and 178 average for all of them. So like they've all kind of fallen into this place where I'm kind of almost just working off that data of going, right, I know kind of where the effort lies at these ones. I know that, you use the rough guides of, pace you can hold for an hour when you're rested and tapered and in a race conditions. And again, I know for me, I'm like, I can hold that kind of low 180s. And again, that might not be actually technically my lactate threshold. I'm not sure exactly on the number, but it's pretty. I know the number that if I see that when I'm running a marathon session, it's too high. Like I kind of know that point where I'm like, if I'm in a rep and I see over like 181, I'm like, I have to drop that back. I know I'm not going to be able to sustain that for this session. And the hard thing is, I'm like, I probably could do that session. Like I feel like for most of the marathon sessions where you're building up to say 20Ks worth of work, I can get through that hard. Like I can push those hard. I don't feel like I have any issues getting through those. I sometimes finish that and I'm like, well, that felt great, but it didn't feel like what 35Ks into a marathon feels like. So I've kind of liked that last block for Gold Coast. I was probably doing more like, I suppose, getting a better gauge of my heart rate at the end of long runs, where I'd put in like, say 20 or 30 minutes worth of work at kind of this marathon pace and seeing where that heart rate came out and going, does that fit with what I've had in previous numbers and kind of working backwards off race results rather than, lab data. But that's how I've kind of done it.
Yep, sure. Clive, how about you, mate?
Yeah, similar. So I've never done lab testing, but I guess I've done enough half marathons and 10Ks now that I've got an idea of what sort of heart rate is sort of the ballpark. And then I guess I've done enough threshold runs where I can kind of tell what feels like the right pace. And I don't know if you have this experience too, Kyle, but I feel like if I'm running at my threshold, my heart rate is stable. if I'm running a little bit too hot, and my threshold heart rate's somewhere between 181 and 183, in my experience. If I'm running a bit hot, my heart rate starts climbing quite quickly. Like I can see it picking up over a few minutes, and it gets closer and closer to 190. Whereas that sort of 181 to 183 is sort of limit where I can just hold it stable and it won't climb.
Yeah.
So that sort of all those things combined, and you're sort of checking against your pace too. And yeah, as I said, once you've done a few races and a few threshold runs, you kind of get an idea of where your threshold heart rate tends to be. And I don't think it changes very quickly like your pace does as you get fit. Like your threshold heart rate kind of stays stable and your fitness picks up, but the actual heart rate doesn't really change.
Yeah, I think like exactly what you said, and like that's literally like the definition of it. Like you, at that point, if you don't have to be like a beat or two over it, and I'm like, I almost know. Like if I see it, because I pretty much 183. If I can stay just below that, I can hold it steady. As soon as I see 181, 180, let's say 184, 185, like I could look back down a minute or two later, and it's 190, and I'm like, all right, I've got about 3, 4, 5 minutes here to get this back, or I'm in big trouble here. So you've got to kind of react to it. Yeah, exactly like you said. You get fitter, you get more efficient, you can just run faster for that same heart rate, but your heart and your lactate threshold heart rate won't really change other than getting older. But that's something that happens very slowly.
Yeah, agreed. I think I can't talk highly enough about heart rate monitors. Chest straps, definitely. The arm ones are pretty good now these days. The watches are better, but I just think it's hard to rely on the heart rate. It's a bit more variable and up and down, and yeah, it's not as reliable. And I don't track heart rate heaps. I don't wear a heart rate monitor. I'm massive on feel, and my heart rate's stupid anyway. It rests at like 35, and like I was 160 Clive for the park run, and that was like absolutely gassed, and it's never that high either.
Yeah, that's your wrist heart rate.
Used
That's
to
just not
always get in
precise.
trouble from coaches in school for it, but I'd love to see what it is on heart rate monitor. I've been in testing, just stationary health testing where you're getting your heart monitored and all that kind of stuff, and it's fine. But yeah, can't talk high enough about the heart rate monitors, which I assume, Kyle, you have. It's a staple. Clive with a shirt off and a heart rate monitor, that's him to a T.
I've had the arm one for ages. I've used an arm monitor for probably like the last 4 or 5 years. I can't remember. I had one ages and ages ago. And I found it almost like identical to the chest strap for mine. But like I was saying, my wrist heart rate is atrocious on my watch. Like I'm talking like if I do my easy running heart rate is almost comes out the exact same, if not sometimes a bit higher than what it'll do as soon as I start doing a session. Like it'll almost drop when I start doing a session. And then I've had some easy runs where I've looked down, it's been like 215 on my wrist heart rate. And I've had to like stop and manually take it and be like, all right, that's definitely wrong. I hope that's wrong. And it's just been all over the shop. So like I'll never leave that turned on anymore because you just cannot rely on it at all.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's get to you, Kyle, your training. And yeah, anything that's led you to today, Sunday, 9 p.m. What's happened from Monday onwards?
Well, and I touched on the podcast. I've had a bit of an issue with my hip, kind of the last month or so, which is more just with like an impingement of the joint. It's getting it quite inflamed and sore, and it's a tricky one that I can't really make it much worse other than just more sore and inflamed. So, I pretty much was having pretty much no running for nearly a couple of weeks, only a couple of weeks ago. So I'm kind of on this slightly aggressive rebuild and just kind of crossing my fingers and hoping for the best with this, which is not the best approach, but. The plan was to kind of like start to just try to build things back up to normal volume kind of from this week over the next fortnight and just make sure everything kind of behaves itself. So that's hopefully when I'm talking to you guys in a couple of weeks, I'm on track and I am doing more. But this was just kind of the first trying to get back closer to normal training week. So I on a Monday take a group through a work group that I run out onto the trails in Nerang. So we just kind of jog around for an hour on the single trails and go have coffee. So just did 8Ks with them on Monday morning, which I've been doing for 6 years, I think, that Monday morning run. So I always enjoy that start to the week. And then Tuesday, I hadn't actually done any intensity for probably nearly a month at all, just given my hips. I was like, right, I'm going to give this a go and just do, I was going to do 5 by 5 minute reps and just kind of literally, I had no pace goals in mind. I was like, I just need to start running a bit quicker and just see what this thing feels like. And annoyingly, which is getting better now, but annoyingly for a couple of weeks, it was taking about like 40 minutes for my hip to warm up. Like it was quite uncomfortable to run on it for the first 40 minutes of runs. And then I kind of warm up and then I'd be okay. And we normally do about 5Ks for our warm up. And I could tell by the end of it, I was like, oh, this is not really warmed up that well. I'm still a bit uncomfortable on this hip. And I was like, I'm just going to start this session, did some drills, activation stuff, and we'll see how we go. And pretty much from the first rep, I was like, oh, this does not feel comfortable on this leg. Like, so it wasn't overly painful, just felt like I had no power, just was running funny on it. And I think I ran like 3:46s, 3:47s for that 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, that wasn't great. Second rep was like 3:55s. And I was like, I don't feel like I can run any faster on this. This is not great, but it should warm up soon. And then I reckon halfway through the third rep, I was like, oh, that's feeling much nicer. So I think the third rep was a little bit quicker. And then felt like my hip warmed up completely. And then I think the last two reps were maybe like 3:30 and 3:29 or 3:28 or something, and felt way better. So I was like, if I can just get this hip to warm up, I can still run a bit faster. But that was my first session in, I reckon, a month. And I finished that and I went, oh, that wasn't great. Like, that's not a good sign if I'm running 3:50s for 5 minute reps at the moment. This race isn't that far away. But I pulled up a bit sore after that too. And I went, okay, this is not a great sign for where things are at the moment. So I took Wednesday off, and I'd seen the sports doc at work on the Wednesday, which was a planned catch up anyway. And I went on to a different anti-inflammatory, which has seemed to work wonders for me, which has been good. So got out and did a run on Thursday morning and did an hour 20 and actually felt pretty good. Like, I didn't really have this like uncomfortableness for the first 40 minutes, which was awesome. So it was the first run I was like, I feel like I can kind of run a bit more normal. So ticked off 18K on Thursday morning. And then Friday, I was like, right, that felt better on Thursday. We'll have a test of another little session. And a couple of the others were doing 3 by 10 minutes off a 2 minute jog. So I was like, I'm just going to jump in and do that. And the warm up felt way better. So I was like, right, I should be a bit better here. And I kind of, this is probably the first time in like probably 5 weeks that I was running along and actually feeling relatively normal in a session, which was nice. So I did this session with Rinny because she's running really, really well at the moment. The 3 10 minutes reps were 3:29, 3:29, and 3:27 off 2 minutes jog. And the funny thing was, which was quite nice, is because I haven't been running much the last like month, my legs felt amazing. Like, I felt so fresh and my heart rate just went through the roof. Like, heart rate was just way above threshold the last like rep and a half. And I was like, I don't care, I feel great. It was just nice to run fast again and actually not be thinking about my hip, which was quite a nice change. So, and I felt it was weird in that I feel like when I'm in full training blocks and like heavy volume, in those type of sessions, it's my legs that tend to hold me back towards the end. Like, heart rate, I almost find it hard to stay up at threshold heart rate, like to get it to threshold heart rate. Like, that's an effort to stay there. Whereas it's my legs that let me down. Whereas this one, I was like, my legs feel amazing. It's just I'm way above threshold here. Like, I'm just not going to be able to hold this for much longer. So kind of got through the session and went, right, that was kind of the first proper session I've done in just over a month. And I've definitely got a bit of work to do from there, but it was nice just to be back kind of feeling like I was running freely for the first time in ages. So ticked that off on Friday, and then got out, just jogged Saturday morning, just did an hour around the Broadwater in Southport. And then yeah, we got out, and like I said, it was probably a more aggressive long run than I should have done, given that I think the longest I'd go on was like 90 minutes in like the 5 weeks leading into today. But anyway, I've got a race in 10 weeks, so I need to start pushing things. So I did. We ticked off just over 30K with the group this morning, and everything felt okay, which was nice. Like, no major concerns. So I think I did 102 Ks this week, or just under 102 Ks, which is a lot more than I was running a few weeks ago. So at the moment, everything's holding up okay. But I'm hoping that if I can continue to build some volume and sessions the next couple of weeks, that everything hip wise kind of remains in one piece. But so far, so good.
Yeah, had me thinking, Kyle. Clive had a bit of an injury scare the other week, didn't you, Clive? But more profoundly, about what, a year ago, with an injury that lasted for months on end. Just with the injury for you with the hip, is it something? And I'm talking to a physiotherapist here, so I'd like to think you've got some reasonable answer. But do you like to get the athlete and you moving and maintaining that running to some capacity? As opposed to, I feel like it's a bit old school now to tell the client or the athlete to just do nothing for days, for a week or whatever, and the importance of movement for that runner.
It very much depends on the injury. So again, I work with a lot of runners with bone stress injuries. Like, that's a big part of what I'm doing at work and working with the sports docs and the dietitians. So managing those type of injuries is very different because like it does require rest, and it's a bit more black and white. And I generally say to runners at work, I'm like, if I can keep you running, I'll keep you running. Like, we'll do everything we can to keep you training if we can first, before having to modify things. The trigger thing with my hip was, It's more of just like an inflammatory process. So I can't, like, I'm not really going to structurally do anything to it other than make it inflamed and make it sore. So it's one of those ones where it was like, right, I actually need to like rest this, because if I keep trying to run through it, I'm just not going to be able to run through it. It's just going to keep getting more inflamed. It's not like it's something that needs to be like loaded up and necessarily strengthen that specific spot. Like, there's obviously strength around it that I need to build to reduce the risk of it happening. But I've got a little kind of extra bit of bone that sits on top of the neck of my femur that just makes it really prone to getting inflamed and pinched in certain positions. So that's what's making it kind of sore. So it's one of those ones that's like, I just need to get it calm and keep it calm while I keep training. And obviously, if I didn't have a Osaka coming up, I probably would have been a bit less aggressive the last week or so. But I'm literally just doing it where I'm like, right. And I'll say this to people that I work with in the clinic as well, of like, you know, there's no black and white pathway of how you do this. It's like, do you want to go aggressive, knowing that there's the risks that this might get more sore, or are we going to go more conservative and get a, you know, more guaranteed outcome? So I've probably taken a slightly more aggressive approach, knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, if I'm traveling to Japan to do this, like, I'd rather have a good training block and get on the start line feeling good. So I've taken that aggressive approach, and again, it's just walking that fine line between not tipping it over the edge and end up being okay.
Yeah, what's your experience being Clive? Because you're a little bit different in that the whole deload concept and the bone complications you've had with injury.
Yeah, well, I've had a couple of sacral stress fractures now, so I get hyper. I'm hyper aware of that region, and any little niggle or ache around there, I go straight to spiraling into thinking it's the worst case scenario. So, yeah, I had a. What felt to me like a sacral stress fracture not that long ago. When I got an MRI, showed zero bone marrow edema, zero signs of bone stress. When I got a CT just to be safe, and CT showed the same thing. But I'm you know still getting these aches around the region, which caused me a bit of anxiety, to be honest. But I guess I've got the confidence of knowing the imaging is, you know, if there was something going on there, you'd expect to see a bit of edema in the MRI, and if there's none there, then hopefully the, you know, the aches that I'm feeling are just normal soft tissue things and nothing to be too concerned about. But something I've factored into my training, and this is something I picked up from Professor Stuart Warden, is I do a 12-week skeletal deload. Just as a bit of a precaution to let the, you know, the bone remodeling process try and catch up with the training load. I guess a bit of a safety net. So every 12 weeks I have a at least 6 days off running. Just get on the bike and keep hitting the gym and that. And then every maybe 6 weeks I'll have a like a mini deload week. So maybe 4 days off or 3 days off. And yeah, as I said, it's just a bit of a safety net to if I am perhaps overdoing it and there's bone fatigue developing under the surface that I'm not aware of, it gives the body a bit of a chance to catch back up.
I think that's smart too to do it that way, Clive. Like, again, I kind of see all the bad side of things kind of work, and there's a lot of factors when it comes to bone stress injuries. But I think just if athletes take that proactive approach and actually kind of get on top of that from a loading point of view, from that side of the factors that cause these things, it's a super useful thing to do. So it's very smart.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
like
thanks.
the transparency too from the physio, Kyle, where that option is there. You know, we can continue with this, and there may be some niggles, and then subsequently, quite a bad injury from it. But the option's there for the client, and that obviously that is the aggressive, more risky approach. But it's just not so black and white, and that choice is available to the client. But yeah, any other questions there, Clive, for Kyle on his running week or?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. One, so your hip's feeling better at the end of the week than it was at the beginning of the week?
Yeah, and I'd say definitely it has been better. It's definitely not at 100%. I kind of, and again, that was probably just the change on the anti-inflammatory that I'm on. That's just more of a fast relief one, a release one that kind of gives me a lot more relief while I'm running. So the one I was on was more of a slow release one that I'd take once a day that wouldn't really be that effective at the time of running. Whereas I've kind of swapped onto a different one that's kind
Right.
of way more effective while I'm running, which has been good. And it's more for me. I feel like if I can get it kind of calm, I run better. Like, technically, I'll run better on it as well, which is also better for it. And so it's like, for me, if I'm running and kind of getting lazy and almost running a bit slower, that's what puts it in positions that kind of makes it worse. So I'm this fine balance between, oh, I don't want to run super fatigued because I'll fatigue and drop into that position. But if I run too slow, I'm also going to drop into that position. So I feel like I've kind of got this sweet spot at the moment where it's kind of happy and like it's still definitely affecting like how I'm running. I don't feel like I'm running 100% normally at the moment. But I'm more probably interested in how it's pulling up afterwards rather than kind of what it's feeling like during. Like it's definitely better during than it was earlier in the week. But if I'm pulling up okay afterwards and it's not too sore and I can back that up, I'll kind of be okay with that. I've got a like I can get it. It's one of those ones that you kind of can just get a cortisone injection into to try and really calm it. So I've got the referral for that if I need it. Only then, again, it's just the timing around race day and stuff. I'd prefer not to get it, but that's just like the backup option. If kind of I'm like, right, I'm just going to push because that's kind of what I need to do, and I need that to kind of keep it at bay. But hopefully not. Hopefully, I won't need it.
Hey Kyle,
Yeah,
what's the
cool.
anti-inflammatory that you do take before running or if you're in pain?
Look, the one I'm on at the moment, and again, this was given. This is sports doc, so again. This doesn't mean everyone go out and try and get this medication, but I'm on naproxen at the moment, which is more of a fast release one. So that's just again through sports physician we've got at the clinic. So we're quite fortunate to have. So it's Dr. Stacey Compton, who's actually from Brisbane. She works down on the coast at our clinic one day a week, and I've worked with her for 5 or 6 years. Is very experienced with bone stress injuries as well, which is why I work with her a lot. But just generally, is quite athlete focused. Kind of gives you the options of what we can kind of do, and was pretty good to work with as far as. This type of stuff, not this is a bone stress injury, but kind of going, right, these are our options. This is what we're going to do. Like, which pathway do you want to take? So I've kind of been given all the different options of kind of how I can approach this with the goal being actually like getting me to the start line of the race, not just, you know, they could easily say, just don't do anything and I'll probably feel fine. So I've kind of swapped medication like for that reason, like she's been quite useful with that. But yeah, again, with medications, it's a tricky one that may not be the appropriate one for other people as well, but that's what I'm on at the moment.
Yeah, mate, and future running like next week, etc. What's on
Yeah,
the horizon for you?
hopefully it's going to be a little bit more. Again, I'm going to be cautious with the intensity at the moment, just because I reckon if I really push that, that's just going to be a little bit risky for kind of flaring things up. So I want to get the volume probably a little bit higher again next week, and maybe like just a similar level of intensity to what I did this week. And just if I can tick off a week with that feeling better, I'm kind of going to be happy with that. I probably before Gold Coast, I think I was probably averaged maybe in maybe like say 135 Ks a week. For probably like the 6 or 8 weeks. And I'd probably done that leading into this bit of time off I had a few weeks ago as well. So in my head, I'm kind of like, if I can get myself back up around that, let's say 130, 140 Ks in a couple of weeks, I'm happy to just kind of sit there for 6, 7 weeks, get the right amount of intensity in. Because I look at this block and I'm like, my two goals are pretty much like get aerobically as strong as I can and just get my threshold as far below 332 as possible. So I'm literally just like mapping out weeks of like, if I can just tick those two things off, like, that's literally the goal I need to hit this goal in Osaka. So everything will revolve around that.
Very good. Anything I've missed there, Clive?
Oh, that's all really interesting to hear, actually. I love that our PBs are very similar, and I get to hear about your training
Crazy.
approach. And yeah,
Really?
it's cool that we get to sort of bounce ideas and all that. It's
Yeah, it'll
awesome.
be good. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm now concerned if we ring someone else in, they're going to be quite different to you guys. Is there anyone else out there that can run a 3:31, 32 marathon and has similar PBs? Maybe they'll listen in and chime in.
We'd have to have a look. I'm not too sure. Although I just saw on this note, speaking of local news, I don't know if you guys know Marcus Hughes. He's English, but he lives on the Gold Coast. He just ran 2:28 over in Spain like a couple of minutes ago. Just saw him post it. So that's another fast runner we've got around
Wow.
Southeast
Wow.
Queensland. A lot of people wouldn't know who Marcus is, but keeps to himself. But just ran 2:28:17 over in Spain. He's someone we train with a little bit and run past it most mornings. So there's some fast guys around, which is exciting.
Yeah, wow. Well, I was talking to Peter Bracken from BERT, and his name escapes me. Might be Derek, Ollie. You might know
Yeah,
him.
Derek
They're both
Leahy.
2:31 guys.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Scottish
that's the one.
guy.
Yeah, Derek Leahy. Yeah,
Yeah.
So they've both run 2:31, and I've signed up for Valencia next year.
Nice.
So probably
Awesome.
also on the sub 2:30 wagon.
Pretty sure their PBs are like exactly the same as ours, Clive. Pretty sure we're all four of us are within like 5 seconds of each other. I'm pretty sure
That's
we're all
awesome.
exactly the same.
Mate, Pete said he'd run 17:30 at park run yesterday. He smashed that 16:30, but that's where his head's at the moment. He said he's struggling for motivation. So if that's anything for him, if he listens, hopefully that is Pete. Stick at it. Let's finish with some listener questions. There isn't much here. They're all for Clive, Kyle. Maybe that's because this is more of a
Sorry.
Brisbane thing. But yeah, and have a guess,
Are
Clive,
these
who's on.
serious questions or silly questions?
Now there's one serious question here from a serious person in your life.
Okay.
Who would that
I've got some serious.
be?
My wife just stuck her head around the corner and gave me a funny look, so it might have been.
Now, that's a good question. It is Ricky Clive's wife on the list. So I'll go to hers. This is all about psychological stuff, Chance. She's asking about this stage of the journey in the marathon prep. How much of it is mentalized? It's a quite a broad question, isn't it? But there's a lot to that. Like your goals that you guys just set to me earlier to the listeners, that's a mental application in itself, isn't it? To have an image in mind, a time that you want to hit. Then it's also like motivation to get up every morning to train. Like for you guys, is it that goal time that's really the driver for you, or is it other intrinsic or extrinsic factors that are there and abouts for training and racing? If we started with Clive.
So I think there's maybe two parts to that answer. The first part is the, I guess, the risk of injury, right? And I've got this history of bone stress injuries, and sometimes I feel like I'm walking a tightrope, and it causes me a lot of anxiety that I want to push my body to my limit, and achieve ambitious goals. But you know, that comes with risk, and at any point I could fall off that tightrope and miss out on it all. But then I don't want to just hobby jog 60 Ks a week either. So, wrestling with that anxiety that comes with injury risk, and a bone stress injury, as Kyle would know, isn't something that you can just have 4 weeks off and then get straight back into it. It's a pretty, for someone who loves running and it's a big part of their life, it's the 3, 4 months it takes to get, or longer actually, to get back to where you're at is, I guess, almost like a mini PTSD experience, right? Like you just don't want to
Oh,
put your
yeah.
body through, or your mind through that. So that's tough, and I'd say that's tougher for me than the mental toughness aspect that comes with, you know, competitive racing and competing in marathoning. I think that stuff comes with just the right training, because when you're training, you're not just training your body to get physically fitter, you're training your mind to the demands of the marathon, and conditioning the mind to tolerate long durations of discomfort. So for me, you know, you've got an ambitious goal and you're hungry for it, and you work. The fact that you're working continuously at this goal for several months, and you're flying across the world to go and execute the goal, kind of the mental attitude to achieve that goal just is inherent in the amount of dedication you put into achieving the goal. So for me, as I said, the challenging thing I really find at the moment is just, yeah, that feeling like I'm constantly walking a tightrope, and any point I could find out that yeah, I've got some bone stress signals, and you know, a sarc is out, and there goes all that effort and you know, excitement and investment, and you know, got to go back and start again.
Yeah, that's so different, isn't it? I guess, Cole, you have that recent injury too, but yeah, how about yourself in terms of mental stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously I've just been talking about this injury the whole time, but this is the first time I've had to miss a single training session due to any niggle or injury since 2017. Like I have not had a single issue in the last 7 years, and this is the first time I've had to miss anything because of it. So I'm in this weird spot where I haven't even had to, other than all day, every day at work, I haven't actually had to think about anything like niggle or injury wise myself in as long as I can remember. So I'm in this weird spot now where I'm like, oh, I've got to put my like physio brain on and go, what am I supposed to do with this thing? Because it's not something I've had to think about. And again, like Clive said, the bit for me at the moment with this kind of little niggle thing is I'm like, oh, like I'm flying across the world for this race. Like if this was a race, it was just a local one, I probably wouldn't be worrying about it too much. But I'm like, right, well, I'm going. I've booked the trip. Like we're going on a family holiday anyway. So it's like, I want to try and get myself ready for this race. But all of a sudden now I'm trying to juggle this. Like I want to try and train and be at my absolute peak. Like you want to run a PB, like we're in here talking about sub 230. But at the same time, like, got to look after my body and not start making that go downhill and not even get to the start line. So it's this kind of fine line where you're like, I want to kind of push, which I, again, in previous times, I've just been able to push as much as I like and not had to even think about anything. Whereas this kind of little bit for me at the moment, these few weeks, I'm almost having to be that little bit more cautious, which mentally I'm like, right, should I be pushing a little bit more? Do I need to hold back? Like it's this interesting little spot. And I don't think it's the worst thing, because I said training through summer for this block, it's probably not the worst time to be actually holding back that 5, 10% and being a little bit smarter with things. So it's an interesting spot that I'm in because I have not been in this position training for a big race pretty much ever, especially in not a marathon. So I'm kind of looking forward to that challenge because I feel like I talk to clients all day, every day when they're in my shoes, and all of a sudden that's me going, right, now I've got to manage myself through to this race. So it's going to be an interesting next few weeks. So I'm looking forward to the challenge because that just adds another component to it. And yeah, like Clive said, I think as far as motivation to do it, yeah, the time obviously motivates me, but again, you know, being a coach and kind of having a group to train with, like you almost want to try and set the example and kind of take the lead with that. So the last thing I want to be doing is sleeping through alarms and not showing up to sessions. So I think that also gets me out the door every morning.
Yeah, 100%. I think that that group factor too that both of you have that I have too with Clive at the Bush Turkeys is a draw factor. But even away from that, I think if you set those ambitious goals, they really mean something to you. Like it's a no-brainer to get out the door in the morning when someone asks you, oh, how it's too hot or it's raining or how on earth do you manage to do that? Like it's it is hard to explain, isn't it? But if you have this ambitious, realistic goal and particularly if you're traveling overseas, well, it's something that's got to be done, right?
That's
Yeah,
exactly it.
absolutely.
Now, gents, we've gone for plenty of time here. We had nutrition on the list, and you can see both in a row two series and individually how time can just get swept away from you. And you're both fantastic young fathers who need a good night's sleep, and it's 9:30 p.m. So we'll start to wrap it up. We've heard a lot here, like even within that mental stuff was the injuries, and often runners out there, even someone like Clive, who might meet him at the Bush Turkey Group, thinking that he's just a guy that's always running and never injured. Well, it's not the case. Injuries are apparent for everyone. Kyle, you've been pretty lucky. Maybe it's the physio knowledge that's kept you out of the injury game for 7 or so years, but that's an awesome run you've had there. But injuries are apparent, and mental application is so much a part of it. So yeah, looking forward to talking a little bit more about that. Maybe some nutrition stuff next time about you know, before and during the races and training and how that works for you guys. And we'll continue with the training. So yeah, just keep a track of that mental log as days pass by, so you it's all fresh in your mind for maybe 2 weeks away. What do you think?
That sounds good to
Yeah, sounds
me.
good. Yeah. Oh,
Very
this is
good.
awesome.
Any last comments, Kyle?
No, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I think, like I said before, the interesting thing is, like you said, we've got like equal PBs. So the interesting thing will be like we've got to not get caught up in like comparing what we're doing with each other and just go, right, if we're taking different approaches in different sessions, that's totally fine. I think that'll be quite
Yeah.
fun. And like we've talked about, we might try and line up and actually do a few sessions together in the lead up, which will be a bit of fun to talk about. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, 100%. I'll literally, like, you know, when you think of work courses, you know, courses for work that you might attend for a day that are tolerable, like I could literally sit here for an entire day and it would be far more than tolerable with you guys talking about this stuff. But it is 9:30 and we have plenty of time to come in future weeks. So I'll put this out there to the listeners and get them excited about you guys, but mainly and more profoundly too, is to learn off you guys and have things that resonate in them to motivate them to get out there and running. That's what it's all about. So keep at it. Thanks for your time, gents, and we'll tune in a few weeks.
Thanks, man. We'll
Awesome.
talk then.
Thanks, Ollie. Thanks for having us.
No worries.